Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I wasn't there in 1924 when they put that song together, but I kind of wish I was. It's one of those little wonderful things about 21st century. And listen, these things can still be part of the environment, the world that I live in, the world that you live in. Every day. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Masonic Effects. You know, every so often, you really do get caught up in Louis Armstrong's work on that. And it's said to be perhaps the first recording where he's doing those riffs that hadn't been done by a trumpet player before. Then it's hard today to think that there was a start time, but it was a start time for a lot of things that we don't understand. Ho, ho, ho. It's a funny little world out there, isn't it? Just ha ha, funny, ha ha, scratch your head, funny. What the hell are we? What the hell are we doing in this madness? We're an amazing little creature. This whole notion of awareness. I don't know. We can try and describe it, but it's always going to be elusive, isn't it? It's just so tantalizing to attempt to explain it. But it's like we know, but when we put it down in words, all of a sudden it sort of dissolves. So better that we know it than try and describe it. My God, you know. Hello, an outreach to all you. And a call out to all of our listeners from around the world. I think I might have overlooked greetings to our listeners from Spain the last time I was connected with you. And so I certainly don't want to do that. And Scandinavia, hello and welcome. Thank you for sitting in. And Australia, it's an absolute pleasure. You're in the depths of summer, and I hope you're reveling in it as you are. And what the hell is going on with this tennis star down there? What's he doing to you boys? Anyway, let's take a look at what's going on around our interest in masonry and what's happening. You know, we're seeing the results of these damn cell phones, and I say that glibly. What they've done is created an honesty that wasn't there before, and it's a clarity. everything you see isn't as it seems, is it? Because of our different bias, we're going to draw out what we are looking for. So if I tell you to look at something on a screen and look for the flaw, look for the problem, look for the law breaking, you will find it because you're intelligent. You're an intelligent person. If we set ourselves to the task of looking for the truth in it, oh well, sit down, huh? Sit down. What's really going on? It means that our minds have to be really well trained. I think if we ask a small child to look at a problem that's been vexing for adults, often the small child can, you know, cut through the Gordian knot and tell us what we need to hear. Don't say that in front of Auntie. Don't say that in front of the relatives. You know, you get those instructions when you're growing. What's swirling around us is very imaginative and dramatic, and that's, I think, what makes life far, far more interesting. And we can bristle a bit about our false sense of pride. You know, I'm going to declare what those boundaries are and go out and defend them. Yeah, yeah. Get over yourself pretty fast, because as soon as you do say something like that, you know the lineup at your door is going to be beyond imagination, people just wanting to screw with you. And then there's, for no other reason than they can, and then there's folks that have a more malevolent purpose. And we always have to be aware that those types of folks do exist in our world. And that's where we have to draw out that comment. It is what it is. It's still beautiful, but we have some strangeness going on. The key that unlocks this and the key that protects us is this business of awareness and honesty and truth, those types of things. And behind that, we can operate with quite comfortably inside that configuration. The outside will point fingers at us and talk about mystery, and we use that. You know that it there's a secrecy, isn't it? There's something that goes on behind in those conversations, and why won't they tell? Well, you know, it's like when we have these conversations, even with ourselves, why are some brethren able to connect almost immediately and others struggle with it and some never do? Some long for it, but they need the structure. They need to see or be taught the architecture or the scaffolding so that they can follow and piece together these ideas from empiricism, from what's observable, to more abstract, to the abstract. That doesn't mean these people are stupid. And here, oh my, you know, I guess I'm more, it does legitimate. It's like an Irishman can make fun of an Irishman, but an Englishman making fun of an Irishman is a different kettle of fish, isn't it? Mm. It's not the lifestyle that determines the Mason. It's not the education. It's those things that unify. You know, you've done this for yourself. You've examined and asked yourself these questions, I'm sure. What connects us is this search for meaning, and in order to do that, we either take that path where we act silly about it and try and demean it and make it insignificant, or we declare ourselves by this action, not by directly, to be having come to some terms with that inner voice, with that inner turmoil, the struggle that goes on, I'm my own worst enemy conversation. The can you be honest with yourself if you are changing conversation? Those are elements that pull us together in spite of language and culture. Yeah. Oh, to get there, it's not an honesty or a declaration. I'm not looking for a confession. That's what the hell, that's contrived. That's for a different purpose. No, this is knowing that the struggle isn't with me. Although if you're looking for a scapegoat, go ahead. You wouldn't be the first. Struggle is within yourself, within self. Knowing what you know. And then if I were to ask you, how dare I? What is it that you need struggling with, And then we're going to get into those interesting illustrations, how we got there, why, as if it doesn't matter. How has the problem developed? Some particularly around my part of the jurisdiction are transfixed in that. Not in focusing on how problems have occurred, but denying that there is a problem. Yes, that's a weakness. I know it's about the generosity needed when you're, and the patience and the honesty yourself to be able to respect the struggle. Not everybody, you throw your hands in the air. What do you do? Cast, you grab a wand and cast a spell on everybody that they have awareness when they become initiated in Freemasonry. If only it was that simple. The man that has come to some glimmer of understanding, and he knows that it's not over, that he's going to revisit that question many times, because there's facets to understanding, there's facets to life. Thank goodness. We don't want to wake up every day as if it was the last, until I have a friend that does that. He's formed this opinion in his head that every day is much the same as the next and the last. And it's not based on anything except his opinion. He's stopped taking in, the empiricists would like this. It is, if it doesn't exist, it doesn't, if it's not written, or I can't see it, it doesn't exist. Well, literal translation has been doing a lot of damage for us. When the boys pick up these tomes of metaphor and philosophical illustrations and take them literally, ooh-wee, a good justification for mayhem and murder. Truth is more delicate. You want to question, and you might probably have somebody listening, tuning into Masonic Effects for the first time, will certainly run. I would think the predominant reaction is to scratch their head and shake their head and wonder. You're not going to tolerate the honesty of poetry, his honesty, somebody else's honesty, because the very thing that makes you who you are, I think, being able to use that honesty constructively and purposefully for yourself, I think that takes tremendous courage. Yeah, I do. The kind of courage that, you see when a young mother has to, young parents have to carry on after they learn that their baby is terminally ill. Oh, my goodness. Or that your partner of a lifetime is passing away. Wait. That's not part of this formula. It's real, eh? what's the real part? The wish that you could do it again, that you can continue forever? Well, it has forever, and it will forever in your mind, you big fat Mason, you. The key to unlocking all of these influences, all these theories, all these beautiful, these humanist philosophies, the key, the psychology of Freemasonry is an honesty with yourself. Oh, ball up your fist. Nobody's going to do that to me. I'm going to make it a club, and I'm going to make it a place where all that I need is socializing. Yep. Because that's a hell of an honest conversation, isn't it? And it is if you're coming from recovery and you're wondering how to act normally without just falling apart. Come on, there's men around us in that state of mind. God bless them. And there's men handling a serious weight on their shoulder, one that they can hardly admit to themselves, and certainly would struggle to acknowledge with somebody else. The trust to do that, the trust you begin, that begins at home. He, you, me, we begin to trust ourselves. And it wanes, comes and goes, but it's always there. So today, I hope you'll sit back and relax a bit with us and let us attempt to entertain and inform, you know, and give you a chance to reflect on how you're doing and your movement along this curious path that we're living, and about the influences. And oh my goodness, be careful. Because once you start to do this, you'll get over the sense of vulnerability. Get over it and get over yourself, you know, the sense of pride. Like, we've got almost 8 billion of us all with a sense of pride. So yours is more, you're going to stomp on, yeah, get over it. You begin to realize that that there's some influences that are worth noting. So if you can, take a walk, clear your thoughts, look at the horizon, read something inspiring, listen to the music within and without, and then you're answering that whole bloody question about mystery and secrecy. What's the biggest secret? The secrets you hold in your heart about yourself. Here, that works. See what happens when you get old. You're able to just be so damn. You can be honest with yourself. I don't mean to be stupid, you know. You can be careless or thoughtless around other people. And a lot of old boys do that. I can speak and I can make, you know, when they stand, it sounds like farm animals getting up, you know, all the gases and the noises, like, oh, jeez, you know, that's wonderful to be around, aren't you? No. It's that you can be honest with yourself. Here, you want to hear honesty? You want to hear, listen to what these musicians and this poetry do, this poet, Keats, by the way, listen what they do with their material. They're not, if they held back and worried about how it's going to sound, they couldn't do this. This is like, put it out there, what the hell? Kenny Dorham. Yeah. Thank you. That'll just have to do. Oh, beautiful. Beautiful work, sir. The commentary today with purpose. Thank you. Tell me what you think of this. Because this picks up on something that you said the last time that we talked. Since forever we've done it. Since 1390 when the Halliwell manuscript was produced, we have been exchanging ideas with purpose. Sharing opinions with intimates is interesting. Perspectives, when sought and valued, gain reaction that range from disinterest to validation and influence. Our brotherhood pushes us, in a way, to be different than we were before. It redefines tribe with a whole worldwide footing. The tribe is on a worldwide footing. Little blue pearl floating in the darkness, you know, inhabited by these little creatures that seem curiously bound to get in their own way. Formerly, our thinking was influenced by access to information. Small books of information that blended philosophy with history and conjecture gave us context. Like folklore, it took advantage of fantastical claims that we use to build stereotypes that do not exist, but in the mind. Stereotypes are helpful because we use them to study an idea, to examine it. But let's not lose track that it is always a stereotype. Masonry tells stories that we need to hear. Our research gives us greater access to actuals, alerting us to caveats so that we can move forward knowing when we are integrating myth. I have no fault with that. when we listen to La Boheme or Queen of Spades or Tosca or watch As You Have It or Midsummer's Night Dream, we suspend our sense of reality to access the magic. Masonry does not pull back the curtain. It illustrates the joy of magic as well as the need for fact. Intelligent men understand. Masonry is influential. Influence increases as we understand and integrate ideas. Philosophy allows us to calculate for ourselves. You calculate ethics for yourself. And then you have this wonderful dialogue with your mates. Eh? The dialectics, asking us to use stereotypes, is only for illustration. And thank you, Hiram Abiff. Eh? Masonry, a methodology with no center or edge, makes us step back in our minds to conceptualize what we see in front of us, something that challenges conventional beliefs, for sure. But there are separations. Yes, there are similarities. Who we follow is not he who tells us to follow, it is he who leads. Today, you could be the influence that matters for others. I don't say that to encourage hubris. It's a polite way of saying, somebody's watching. Somebody's always watching. And you're being seen when you don't at all suspect. And those are the beautiful moments when a person's disarmed and they're being themselves and they're doing something very beautiful. Now, what was that you were asking about purpose and the point of Freemasonry? I wasn't clear about that. What say you? Thank you. I don't think I could get too tired of Paul Desmond. It's like getting tired of Benny Carter or Sonny Rollins or Thelonious Monk. I don't know if that's the word. I don't tire of them. It's like saying, oh, I all of a sudden I get tired of the frisson of that magic when I, you know. First, to find the beauty in all of this, we have to imagine it. And your imagination is your own. And if you think that it's gone because you've grown old, give your head a shake. It's like accountability or conscience. You think just because you act like you don't that it's dissolved or somehow you have command. Come on, get over yourself. Get over yourself, man. We have these things. Imagination's with us. We just don't always visit it, do we? It's like dating your wife after 50 years. Yeah, you can always do that. Doing something that you know is meaningful. That's beautiful, eh? We have opportunities. Man, we have opportunities. We have such tremendous opportunities around us. And here again, we sit with a small prompt. This is a prompt. I tell you the reason I'm dithering a little bit is that in some ways I try to relate to the early history of John Keats. He came from very modest means. His dad was a stable manager.
Yeah.
And he didn't get much formal education when he was little. But then circumstance, eh? Some of us had parents who were functionally literate, and you didn't get the leg up that other children did. You did that for yourself. So when his dad died shortly after he was born, he died in 1804, and our friend was born in 1795, so he was, you know, of an age. His mom remarried immediately as women did with children, because my goodness, you know, mouths to feed and responsibilities. But he had always had very close ties. It was a family, tight family feeling, his sister Fanny and his two brothers, George and Tom, very, very close. And after the breakup of their mother's second marriage, the children lived with their grandma in Edmonton, Middlesex. And he went to school at Enfield. And that was run by a guy named John Clark. Not the John Clark over in nearby here. Could have been. He's a sensitive and brilliant man. But John's son, Charles Cowden Clark, did much to encourage Keats' literary aspirations. Can you imagine? So at school, Keats wasn't, he was known as whatever, what's this pugnacious lad, but not literary at all. But in 1809, he began to read. You know, lovely, became absorbed. If you've not had that joy, you're holding off one of the great joys of life. When you can pick up something and your mind pushes away all the distractions and you're focused on the story. Oh, my Lord. It's just so uplifting. It's not an escape. It's a journey. It's an adventure. Just incredible. So after the death, his mom died in 1810. Grandma put the children's affairs in the hands of a guardian, and Richard Abbey was the kid's guardian. And Abbey sent Keats, arranged for Keats to be apprenticed to a surgeon in Middlesex in 1811. And he was there for 3 years. Then he worked at it. He worked as a dresser, that was a junior house surgeon. And he went to live in London. So he got work related to that apprenticeship. And then his literary interests had begun to crystallize by that time. In 1817, he devoted himself entirely to poetry. And from then until his early death, the story of his life is largely the story of the poetry he wrote. Mm-hmm. So here, the first two generations of Romantic poets. I think of Romantic poets. These were the poetry of self-love, I think, is a better explanation, where people are talking about themselves, deeper meaning, not just the empiricists ruling the world, but trying to make sense and asking the questions and admitting that there's doubt. Romantic poetry. The French Revolution and the acceleration of the Industrial Revolution led to unprecedented changes in the cultural and political structures of European society. One day they're going to say something similar about us and the impact of COVID-19. Mm-hmm. We're the contemporary Black Death. You're going to look at how we coped and what effect it had, and we'll gradually know. And of course, we're going to poke a stick at the incompetence of politics. Of course, right? Why wouldn't we? The young Wordsworth and Coleridge were deeply involved in the life of their times. And Blake, fiery, he's a radical, an outsider attacking the status quo. And Shelley and Byron, imagine. You didn't just have one. This is hindsight talking about the genius of these poets, but look at the names. You know, this is an uncommon time. What lit them up was this sense of, you know, have you noticed? Somebody said, have you noticed that? And they said, oh my God, yeah. And what about this? And what about, and do you have that same kind of thought process when you're walking in the field, seeing these, all these, and did you notice the daffodil? And all of a sudden, they're conveying, they're connecting. Keats is the great exception. According to received wisdom, he collapses onto a sick bed while his contemporaries leap to the barricades. He listens to the song of the nightingale while they catch the chant of the mob. And he celebrates the alternative power of the imagination while they describe the shadows of dark St. Mills. This is a view of Keats that seriously distorts the reality of his work, but it's been nurtured for almost the whole of his posthumous existence. He died at 25. And his admirers praised him for thinking on his pulses, as he would say, for having developed a style which was more heavily loaded with sensualities, more gorgeous in its effects, more voluptuously alive and to actualities than any poet who had come before him. And they had good reason to do it. The language of all his poems, and in particular the great odes and narratives, have a delicious velvety weight. Don't you like that term, velvety weight? They load every riff with ore, to use one of his own phrases. Here, why would I talk about, listen to you for yourself. Here, do your own calculation. If this is a poem that he wrote in 1818, imagine this guy. Remember when you were 25? That was his. And look at, here I am sharing his work with you, learned people, all these years later, 2022. And this poem was inspired by the Garden of Wentworth Place. And it's very important because it affords a window into the creative process of Keats. It's no secret that his imagination elevates the everyday and produces what can be described as escapist poetry. I think that's kind of there. The richness of the language showcases the classic romanticism found in much of his work. He uses the term fancy for this, but what he's talking about here is fantasy. There's reality and there's honesty. Yeah? That's it. Here, it's not too long here. See if you can pick this up. Okay? Ever let the fancy roam. Ever let the fantasy roam. A sick boy, 25. Ever let the fancy roam. Pleasure never is at home. At a touch, sweet pleasure melteth like two bubbles when rain pelteth. Then let winged fancy wander through the thought still spread beyond her. Open wide the mind's cage door. She'll dart forth and clouds soar. Oh, sweet fancy, let her loose. Summer joys are spoilt by use, and the enjoying of the spring fades as does its blossoming. Autumn's red-lipped fruitage, too, blushing through the mists and dew, cloys with tasting. What do then? Sit thee by the ingle when the sere faggot blazes bright? Spirit of a winter's night when the soundless earth is muffled? And the cake snow is shuffled, and the plowboy's heavy shoon, when the night doth meet the noon in a dark conspiracy to banish even from her sky. Sit thee there and send abroad with a mind self-awed, fancy, high commission, send her and her vassals to attend her. I won't finish the poem because on here we wouldn't be doing it justice. This show isn't about analysis of one piece of work. This is an excerpt. Escapism, it's an ism because we revisit it quite a bit. Music. I was listening to Rachmaninoff and reading some work by one of those crazy Russian authors that we can't hail enough. And it just came together and I was in this state. It was a coincidence. I never thought that the music was done by a Russian, and what I was reading was by a Russian, and there was this Russian connection that might happen. If you understand fantasy, if you're curious, you want to examine it, what does it do in your life? Well, is fantasy part of listening to music or what you watch? What you select, not what somebody else has selected for you. One of these banal things that truly is turning off the imagination. You sit wide-eyed and slack-jawed in front of a screen while somebody bombards us with these short 10-second bursts of ideas. Somebody else telling you that they know better how you should preoccupy your time, I think is a tragedy. It's not that somebody would try it, but now they can do it. And until you and I say, enough of that. Good try. Don't go there. It's like, don't go there. Don't even, you know. But it's not going to stop it from happening. It's just going to put the world on alert. That it doesn't work with the likes of us. We see it coming. Oh, you want me to get all hysterical like the boys that have been brought up that they're the center of the universe by their mothers? Dime a dozen. Dime a dozen. Good try. There you have Fancy by John Keats. I hope you liked that. I hope you enjoyed it. Let's see what the hell this is. This is a little bit of Kenny Burrell. Eh? Last night when we were young. Yeah. If only it was that easy. Thank you. That'll do. Here our great historian, Jacob, who's languishing somewhere in California right now, I imagine, celebrating her successes, tells us about reflects about Amsterdam and masonry, and it's like a warning. We don't actively treat masonry with the kind of respect it gets in other places of the world. Here it's a mixed up kind of world of masonry, the relationship with masonry. There it's a privilege. Here it's a membership. So for those of you who still feel that masonry, who still believe and understand the privilege, these words will resonate, I think. And she begins, having been tarred with the brush of free thinking and irreligion of a very specific historical variety, as well as with civil disorder, the Amsterdam Freemasons offered a carefully worded and overtly pious defense. They respond that while they do not need theologians to discuss matters of religion, they also carefully avoid religious differences among themselves. The Freemasons, it's quoted, are not men who seek to undermine the Christian religion and to bring naturalism into the world. This is a reference to a concern about pantheism, that, you know, a person sees God in everything, in nature. Everything is an aspect of God. It always echoes Hinduism with me, you know. But that's what she's talking about here. And they're not trying to bring naturalism into the world. They have a very clear insight into the limitations of the light of nature. They then indicate their agreement with the religious neutrality of the scientific societies of London, Berlin, Paris, and Rome, although they are quick to point out that they are not the same thing. Instead, their purpose is essentially ethical. It concerns how to live in the world. The Amsterdam Freemasons recognize something about their sociability that we need to keep in mind. It was similar to the goals of the scientific and philosophical societies, and yet it was different. It embraced the whole human being. The Amsterdam Freemasons characterized their detractors by using the mechanical analogy of a spring in a clock. Their pious opponents hold their bodies in check. like a spring wound so tightly that the wheels and cylinders bend out of shape. Eventually, they become like windmills with gears so tight that they ignite under the pressure of their furious rotation. By comparison, the Freemason holds his body as a real part of his humanity. He loves himself wholly. He beautifies his body without disturbing his soul. Out of this self-love comes a love of humanity for society, and in social experience lies the root of ethical conduct. What do we learn? We have to wrap up for another week. I hope this has been interesting, talking with you about your conversation with your thoughts, with your conscience. It's always interesting. It's not, but there's a time. You know, there's not this. This isn't a conversation that does well as an imposition. It's not an agenda it's not an item on a new business on the agenda. This is something you come to yourself. But rest assured, the men around you are like-minded. This is one of those convenient secrets that men hold. Once you know it, it's something that causes quite an interesting reaction. It's like an acknowledgement. You know me. You know of me. And you will find some people will be quite threatened by this sense of intrusion, especially those that are wrestling with it. And then you'll find that there are some people that are sort of just bouncing along, if you think that being clueless is an advantage in life, you might want to rethink that. You know, it's like when we immerse ourselves in Masonic thinking, it's not that any one person is telling you, it's that you are in charge of your learning. And the influences that penetrate that barrier of reality and skepticism begins to ease. It'll still be there, but not with that brittle tension. Not with the brittle tension. It's like you begin to absorb. We begin to absorb ideas. And then we begin to see and understand the world around us quite differently, because we're connecting. Now, remember, you should be very careful. I don't profess to be the source of truths in your world. You go and examine these things for yourself. Come on. You have to do that. My goodness, don't be foolish enough to be letting somebody else, even me, I don't have anything up my sleeve. Don't let me be doing your thinking. Do that. You're quite capable. What are we, 600 years into this? And you could be right. This could be a whole pile of malarkey. There could be not a shred of anything useful. It's just a party. It's a club. Have a few drinks and a good meal and go your separate way. And carry all the prejudice and bias and carry it all in and carry it all out. Or you can wonder about this elixir that we've been passing along mouth to ear. All this technology aside, it doesn't change. We're still communicating ideas, man to man, person to person. I know, everybody's right. Everybody's right. Come back and join us. I hope you'll sit in next week. We'll take another run at this, as we are a few more steps down the path, we'll talk about what we're seeing and what we're thinking. Maybe we'll agree that truth is, there's something in this notion that the way forward, it has something to do with the virtues. God, I don't want that to be true. And something to do with being honest with the truth and being honest with ourselves. We don't want to go there. We can't have that going on. Next, we'll be breaking out into these profound notions of ourselves and humanity. Can't have that stuff. It's all just a meager struggle for who's got the most. You know, look out there, it's all a competition, capitalism works, blah, blah, blah. Come back. I like being with you. Commit those acts of random Masonic kindness. They're lovely. And for all of them that you've done, that nobody knows about in the past week, I want to acknowledge and thank you. Somewhere you deserve it. Here, finish this off. See you again.
Thank you.